We're doing Pirkei Avot. We're up to the third chapter, the 13th Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva had taught us that lightheadedness, flirting with girls, will bring a person to sinning with them. If a person is careful to tithe, that's going to protect his wealth. If a person is careful to ensure he has a good tradition, that's going to ensure that his Torah is accurate. If a person is going to take on vows, and we discussed you're not supposed to take on vows, but nonetheless, if a person, we discussed the technical details of how a person can protect himself so that he has perishut, so a person can take control of his desires and live well within their means or well within what's permissible. And finally, the last piece of advice Rabbi Akiva gives us is siyag lachochma shetika. One of the ways to ensure to protect your wisdom is to be quiet. You're going to talk too much, you're going to make mistakes. So, the Rabbeinu Yonah explains, Zes yag ben lechochma atzma ben lemidotea. Silence is not only offense for the wisdom itself, but also for the traits that come with wisdom. Keitzad she'eino nichnas letoch divrei chavero. How so? Number one, there's a very bad habit today that people interrupt one another. If you pay attention to conversations, it's a given that part of our lack of patience is that you know what the guy is going to say, right? He's saying a sentence, and before he says the last word, you know he was going to say that last word, and people cut one another off, and that's considered normal conversation. I was once on a date where each of us waited for the other one to finish the sentence. And it was a very slow conversation. Today, our cultural norm is that we cut off one another. But Chazal said that an element of a wise person is that he doesn't. He waits until the other person finishes his sentence. So that's one type of silence. Val ma shelo shamar, omer lo shamati. And another type of silence is when a person knows how to say, I don't have a tradition on that, or I wasn't there when they taught that, or I didn't hear that. That's an element of being truthful, so that's part of being a wise person, to say, I don't know. You guys remember the story of Rav Shach and the guy who got smicha in Panovich, right? At the end, after he got smicha, he was tested by all the rabbis, and then he was supposed to go to Rav Shach, to the Rosh Yeshiva, to get tested. And Rav Shach... he comes to Rav Shach, and Rav Shach says to him, I'm sure that after all the other rabbis tested you, you know everything. You need to know one more thing. And he took him to a room, and he said, I want you to sit in this room and say 500 times out loud, I don't know. That's what you have to make sure you know how to say. And then I'll sign on to your smicha. That's a hard one. I remember when I first got smicha, so people assume you got smicha, you know everything. Finished. They ask you questions, and you're uncomfortable saying, gee, I don't know that. So I spoke to a relative of mine who was a new doctor, and he said to me, he has the same thing. He says, once you get that doctor's license, people ask you questions. Come on, you're a doctor, don't you know? And you have to train yourself to say, I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know. This isn't part of being quiet. It's not part of being wise, but you know, by being quiet, you're going to come to be wise. When a person can be honest and truthful and say, I don't know, he'll come to be wise. La chokhmah keitzad sheino medaber bifnei mi shegadol mimenu b'chokhmah. Part of being wise is that if there's someone smarter in the room, so you wait and let them answer the question. Why should you answer the question? If there's someone who knows more, so ask him. When a person's learning, sometimes a person thinks, I have a good understanding, I can understand the logic. Don't be quick to assume what you understand is correct. We're very often it seems obvious, it's not so obvious. I had numerous times when I was in Rabbi Feinstein's class where I thought I had clear an understanding in Rashi or in the Gemara. And he went and said exact opposite. So one example of that is sometimes Rashi discusses the word chashad. It says, don't do this because you have to be concerned for chashad. What does the word chashad mean? So The word chashad means to suspect. And Rashi's example, in Tractate Beitza, the Talmud discusses if you have a non-Jewish worker in your house, so there are things they may not do on Shabbat or Yom Tov, because people who see them doing that are going to say, you told them to do that. So it seemed obvious to me in Rashi that Rashi learns that chashad is different than marit ayin. Marit ayin is where what I'm doing naturally seems wrong. I'm going into a Burger King and I'm standing at the checkout counter and I'm giving them money and it looks like I'm buying something non-kosher. It could be I'm paying them for the use of their parking lot or I'm paying them for the use of their facilities. But everyone sees me standing there. The obvious thought when you see someone there, what they're doing seems wrong. You walk into a McDonald's and you have your own sandwich in your pocket and all you need is a warm place to eat it. So you sit at their table and you're eating your sandwich. Well, anyone who looks, you don't have to suspect. The obvious thing you're seeing seems wrong. It seems like the guy's eating non-kosher. You see him eating a hamburger in McDonald's, you're going to think it's not kosher. You're not going to think he brought it from home. So marit ayin is where the situation lends itself to thinking he did something wrong. You have to really think a convoluted thought to figure out a way of thinking what he did was right. And chashad is where you have to make an assumption in order to think what he did was wrong. You know, there's no reason to assume one way as opposed to another. If you'll make a negative assumption about him, then you'll assume what he did was wrong. So that seemed clear to me from Rashi, that Rashi was making this distinction. And Rabbi Feinstein read it the other way. He said, chashad means marit ayin. So I started arguing with him once and twice and three times, and he didn't give in. He said, no, it's the same thing. And I said, but isn't Rashi saying this here? And isn't Rashi saying that there? And every time he said no. And only about a half a year later, I discovered that it's a big machloket rishonim about, is there this distinction between chashad and marit ayin? Are they synonymous? So sitting in class, it seemed clear to me from the little bit I saw in Rashi one way. Now, he was once giving a class, and he explained the Talmud one way, and I said the other way. And he said, no, not that way. And I said, again, but here, don't you see, it says here this, and it says it that, and it says no. And every time he gave a convoluted pshat in Rashi, and he gave a different pshat in the Gemara, and I said, but, the wording says what I said. And he said, no, that's not the pshat. Okay, we wait. After trying two or three times, I gave up. I couldn't understand why he was saying that. After class, I came over and I said, Rebbe, wait, what I said, is it wrong? Why is that not the pshat in the Gemara? Here's the wording. And I was pointing to why I thought the wording said it. He said, yeah, you're right. I said, then why didn't Rebbe explain it that way? So he started quoting me from all over Shas and explaining to me why if we learn the Gemara this way, then this Gemara contradicts so many other places in Shas. So when he was explaining it, he had in his mind places from all over. I was just looking at the line over there. I said, the line over here says this. And he said, you can't say that, because then you're contradicting this line in Talmud here and that line down there. And he had it all worked out in his mind, but he wasn't going to explain that all in class. He just explained it the right way. So sometimes when we're studying, we think off the bat, I got that, and we give a logical reason, which seems logical from our perspective. He says part of what the Mishnah is telling us is that a gate for wisdom, a fence for wisdom, is being quiet, is don't be quick to come and give a reasoning just because it seems right to you. The Talmud says very often we can figure out reasons, and they're not right. We can think of all kinds of reasons for halachot. You don't yet know them. Ve'lo yirtze lo'omra b'term she'yisayim rabo mildaber. You shouldn't jump up and say, ah, I got that. Let him finish teaching. Because maybe you'll hear more, you'll understand the full reasoning. And if you don't do that, sometimes you feel like, I got it, you walk out, you got it, and you already write down what you think it means. Then a person's going to lose what his teacher is really teaching. And then a person loses the real reasoning that comes from way back when. Because a person sometimes is very uptight to get his opinion out. I got that, and I want to say what I think, and I think I got it, so I'm going to write down what I think, but I'm so busy with what I think that I'm not hearing what Chazal are teaching me. I heard one line, I heard one sentence, I got what to say, or I got what I think, and then I'm not listening anymore. And that, you guys will see, is very common in teaching and in parenting. Yes?
Facilities, if you need to use the restroom. companies like that, you use it, people do it, it's the norm, you don't feel like you're stealing. But in your example, if you bring your food there, you can't just sit at their counter at their table, you got to buy a Coke or something, I would think, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't...
You're not doing it.
It's a good point. I feel that if people go for a date sometimes to a hotel lobby, you should buy a drink. You're using their facilities. You know, pay for something. To me, it seemed obvious. So I had dates where the girl asked me, "You're so rich." And I said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't think we can sit here and use their facilities without buying something. But I had girls who looked at me like wealthy American. And I just thought it was a part of being honest. Like, what do you mean? How could I just sit there? They're eating it. They have staff here. They don't mean for you to just come and sit in their lobby if you're not going to buy something. I'm just saying, not everyone had that norm. Not everyone viewed it that way.
And
even when we think we have a logical reasoning behind something, you're not going to get it until you hear everything that the early commentary said. And very often something resonates with us right away, but that's because we haven't heard the alternative yet. So at first glance, it sounds like this is right, but why don't you hear out the different opinions and the traditions we have on this, and then you can figure out what's right. That's why knowing to listen quietly and grasping what's being said, that's why that's one of the fences that ensures that one can attain wisdom. I think Plato was the one who said that in his academy, the first 3 years, no questions. You study for 3 years, you hear everything, and then you can start asking questions. But in the beginning, you got to first grasp the material. Uvi Matzit? I think it was Plato.
I bet Kiva, they said, said, right? Was in the for a long time, years and years, without hope to his mouth, I heard.
So that I don't know. I don't know, could be. I don't know. Uvi Matzit, Svarav, Arav Odenu Midaber, Vu Shotek, Lo Yiftach Piv, Ad Sheiru Divrei Rabo, Vesvartoch HaKuka Belibo,
and sometimes you think you got a reasoning, you have something figured out, but there's still the subject being taught. So if a person's listening and he hears out what's being taught and he grasps the line, the reasoning that's being taught, and he engraves it in his heart, and then he understands at least what's being taught, and then he asks himself, okay, what I thought, was that right? Was it clear? Was it accurate? Well, then you can compare it to the full picture. My father would always tell me that if you interrupt the class, it's like gauging a barber in the middle of a haircut. You walk in the middle of a haircut, he seems like a lousy barber. What you doing, cutting half his head off? You know, he looks horrible, right? You didn't see the full haircut. So it's like, that's what hearing out a class before you ask the questions. That's what King Solomon said. King Solomon says in Proverbs, the fool isn't seeking out wisdom. What he's seeking out is expressing himself. That even when he comes to learn, he's really coming to talk. Says that's what Shlomo Amar says. The fool is not seeking wisdom. Rather, to reveal libo, his own hearts, his own thoughts. Shlomo Amelech. It's a verse in Mishle. The commentaries here quote something which people say in the name of Mark Twain, but really it's again a verse in Proverbs. The pasuk says, "Gam evil macharish, chacham yechashev." Even someone who's really lousy, he's a lousy human being and he doesn't know much, but he sits there quietly, so then people will think he's smart. And that's what Mark Twain used to say. Better be quiet and let people think you're smart, and then open your mouth and remove all doubt. But it's not Mark Twain's line. It's a verse in Proverbs. You know, he worded it in English. But the verse in Proverbs says, Otim sfatav navon, someone who keeps his mouth closed, people can think he's smart because he hasn't contradicted them yet. Sometimes just sitting there quietly impresses people. So that's the final piece of advice that Rabbi Akiva says. You want to attain wisdom, and perhaps, I don't remember the medrash you're quoting, that Rabbi Akiva sat and learned for so many years without asking anything. But Rabbi Akiva is telling us, you want to learn, you have to first listen, and that involves being quiet. That's a siag la chokhmah shetika. So...